Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and are always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today we have another interview with Tiff Marcello. Tiff is a veteran Army nurse and author. In her writing, she believes the strength of family, the endurance of friendship, heartfelt romance, and is inspired daily by her own military hero husband and four children. She's the author of The Key Happily Ever After and Journey to the Heart series. In this episode, we chat about her new release, Once Upon a Sunset, her writing process, as well as a round of book recommendations. Now let's go to the interview.
Hi, Tiff. Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. So welcome to the What You Read Next podcast.
Yay!
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I always say I'm a reader first and foremost. I am a writer of romance and women's contemporary fiction. And I'm a mom. I'm a veteran. And I'm an Army spouse. So that's pretty much it. That encompasses all of me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's amazing. So you're a veteran. What service did you do?
I was in the Army. So I was an Army nurse. Yeah.
Oh
my gosh. Yeah, it was a great life. But two people on active duty Army was just a little bit too tough.
Yeah.
Especially with how busy it is. So I decided to go ahead and become a civilian nurse. So I got out of the Army after about 9 years.
Oh my gosh. And you're a writer too. So you're a nurse and a writer.
Yes. Cool. Well, I decided to go ahead and not do part-time nursing, even just so I can focus on writing. So I've been really privileged to be able to do that last couple of years.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine, you know, having this passion and growing in it, and then at the same time, you know, having the day job that is draining and stressful and just like, you know, balancing it all.
Oh yeah. And you know, a lot of writers do that, and you really need to kind of figure out when the right time is, you know. So for us, it was definitely like a family decision as to when it was time for me. When I said, you know, it's always been a goal to be able to step away from nursing. But, you know, it took planning. So you have to be kind of responsible, even though it's a creative venture, you know?
Mm, yeah. So what inspired you to become a writer?
So I've always wanted to become a writer. I can remember back when I was like 9 or 10, like really devouring these books from the library, and then finding out that Essie Hinton, who wrote The Outsiders, she was 15 when she wrote that book.
Really?
And I went to my dad and I said, this is what I want to be. Like, I want to write. And then, you know, my dad, we moved here from the Philippines when I was young, and he was like, no, you can't be a writer because you need to eat. You know, it was like, they're very pragmatic. And he never said, don't be a writer. He just said, you've got to do something else, you know? So I kind of put writing aside in terms of my career, you know, my educational goals, like as I got through high school, although I still had such an amazing time in my English classes and my writing classes, I chose nursing and love that thoroughly. And when my fourth baby was born, really decided, okay, I need to do something about this, because by then I was blogging for many years and I was writing short stories and I was writing some, I was freelancing a little bit with some magazines and our magazine. And I said, why don't we go ahead and do that. And so I did. And that was like, it took like 5 years of querying, two YA books. And then with the third book, which ended up being North to You, that it took. So it was about 5 years worth of querying.
Oh my gosh. And so
yeah,
that's a long journey, just querying and just getting the books published. What has been the most surprising thing about getting this, being part of this journey of getting books published, writing books, and then getting them published and seeing into the world?
I think what it is that what surprised me the most is the amount of work that it takes on an everyday basis to be able to put out a book and to put it out on time according to deadline. And I think that I'm kind of grateful that I had an entire career of deadlines.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like when you go to your shift at a hospital, you know, you're given, let's say, cause I did mother baby nursing. So 4 moms and 4 babies, let's say, and then you have 12 hours to complete everything that needs to happen with these patients. And living by those deadlines, I really feel that I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came time to doing admin that is necessary to put out a book and or writing to meet my deadlines, I feel like I'm super prepared.
Mm.
Like, do you know, but it surprised me that I would put so much of my past life, right, into
yeah.
my current life, even as an Army nurse where, you know, there's formations and, you know, wearing your uniform correctly. And, you know, there are things that you had to do and you had to do the right way, the right time. You have to get there on time. You know, these real concrete things that I was able to apply towards my creative life.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. I love the idea of like, you know, because there's so much structure and there's so much like admin and other tasks related to writing.
Right.
Like it's not just you may do some research, you may do some of this, you may do some of that, and that you kind of like create some structure. You kind of have to create a work life, you know, and then you get
yeah.
the lines and all the different things. So it is important. It's great that you had that previous experience that allowed you to just replicate it to this new life.
Right. And I think what it is too is that I kind of learned that you might not do everything, you know, right the first time. You know, there's so many lessons that I learned as a young soldier, as a young nurse, that I like when something happens, like let's say I'm really cracking down on this deadline, I really am able to go into that toolbox
mm-hmm.
to say, okay, you've done this before, you know, like yeah, you've done night shifts, you know, 4 nights in a row, like you know, like these like
yeah.
little things that I tell myself, like, okay, this is hard, but you've done this before and you're going to get through it. It's kind of that same talk I give myself. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. So let's start with writing. Do you follow an outline or do you see where the story leads you?
You know, I actually write a synopsis and I go by that synopsis.
Okay.
I don't outline all the way because
okay.
I feel like I need a little bit of wiggle room. But when I write a synopsis, it hits all the plot points
mm.
and it brings out the motivations of those characters. So the thing about querying for almost five years
mm.
is that I've written a lot of queries.
Mm.
And, you know, queries are one page, pretty much a one page synopsis, right? Not a synopsis, mm-hmm. but a one page pitch of your book. And then within that 250 words, you have to be able to kind of give the gist of the plot as well as why is this character so important,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that writing that
mm-hmm.
and then being able to write a synopsis, I'm able to keep on track.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can't write a synopsis, it means it's not ready for me to pitch,
okay.
you know? So like right now I'm working on proposals for future books.
Okay.
And if I can't put it into a pitch or a synopsis, then that means that I haven't thought about it enough.
Mm.
Like I have to go back to the drawing board and look at my notes and say, okay, why is it, what am I missing in this synopsis or what am I missing in this pitch?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I think it's a really interesting way to look at it, see how you're going to market, how you're going to sell the book, you know?
And I think what it is too, is that like, it helps me understand it before I jump in. I am not I give it up to pantsers everywhere. I'm a little bit too frightened to pants.
Yeah.
You know? but folks are just so amazing to be able to do that. I think that definitely everybody has their way, and mine is to kind of know where I'm going and, but have enough room where I can kind of wiggle through and have my characters do something silly in between.
Yeah, I like it. So how do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of ideas, inspirations, characters, or any type of things within your writing?
So I have, I'm a paper planner. Okay. So in terms of planning my time, I have one big planner that plans all my time. In terms of my ideas, like my list of ideas, I have an app called Trello.
Mm-hmm.
And Trello is like a vision for me, is like a visual chart. So I have a list on the left-hand side of all the ideas I have. And then on the top are timelines. And what I do is I kind of move these cards across where they are in the process.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of plotting, for every idea, I have a different journal, a different notebook. And that's how I keep them separately.
Oh, that's really interesting. I love Trello. That seems like
Trello is it's really neat. And the thing is with Trello is like it's like your little notebook, because you know how they say you should always carry a notebook in your purse, and now that we have our phones, right?
Yeah.
Trello is great because I log into the app and then, you know, something will inspire me and I will go on Trello and then I'll make a flashcard for that specific like one liner and to put in my list. And then when it's time, when, you know, there's no greater distraction when writing a book than to think about another book. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like right now I'm editing my 2021 book and then like, all I can think about is my proposal, but Trello is a great way where you can get on and you can look at your list and you can just kind of glean the energy from it. And then as I continue with my projects, I move them down the line, like draft or proposal or edits or whatever. So
that's really neat. I've tried a little bit of Trello like for a few projects, and it's something that I'm looking forward to trying it a little bit more consistent. So you're just inspiring me to do it.
Yay!
This is exciting. So do you share your work along the way, or do you wait till it's completed for others to read?
So I'm really lucky that my editor is a true developmental editor. So she's been my editor from the very beginning, for my first book. And she's just amazing because she'll work through the books with me. So I trust her knowledge. So she is such a great, not a critique partner, because I don't critique any of her stuff, but she gives such great advice. And what I do is that I don't show anybody anything until I've really cleaned it up. So we're probably at the fourth edit, maybe, or the fifth edit. And that's when I'll show it to readers. So I have both author readers as well as non-author readers.
Mm-hmm.
And they can give me, they're able to give me their opinions, you know, and I even have, I guess my author readers are also like my sensitivity readers for Filipino characters. I am Filipino, and however, I don't assume that I know everything about my own culture. So I like to have somebody or a couple of people who are Filipino American that live different lives than me, and that can kind of spot things that I might have missed. So Yeah, but I don't like to have them see it until my sentences are like clear. So okay. It's like, so that way they can focus on like the content versus like, Tiff, you totally forgot to put a, you know, you stopped mid sentence. You know what I mean? I don't want them to focus on that. So yeah.
So let's talk about your Filipino, because you do infuse the Filipino culture within your books, which I love. That's actually something that inspires me to draw, especially Once Upon a Sunset.
Awesome.
You know, what inspired you to share so much of your culture and share so much of your voice within your books?
Well, I really wanted to write from an authentic space, I think, you know, and I grew up reading some Asian American literature, but not mm-hmm. as much as I probably should have.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say that they weren't out there because maybe I just didn't look hard enough. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah.
I really wanted to make sure there was more. I wanted to be able to put my stories out there as part of what's already out there.
Mm-hmm.
So that the library can be built for the Filipino American culture so that the monolith can be crushed.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like while there are lots of Filipino American books out there, I think that there needs to be more.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to bring in some of the joy that I've had growing up with my family mm-hmm. through my books. It's important to me, and not to say that my entire lineup is always going to be about a Filipino American. You know, at the same time, folks are authors of color. I specifically, as an author of color, don't also want to be pigeonholed mm-hmm. in saying that these are the only characters I want to write. Right. Mm-hmm. But I definitely am so intent on adding to that library of Filipino American books out there. And that's all of my stories that I see in the future have main Filipino American characters. So I think it's a huge like conversation. Do you know what I mean? To mm-hmm. be able to provide books that reflect a marginalized community that should be brought out more into the world. But at the same time, you want to have, or I want to have the flexibility to write anybody just like anybody else does.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think as authors of color, we have a, I don't know, what is it? Typecast? I guess that's the right word. I don't want to be typecasted ever. I want to be able to write the characters that I want to write.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's Filipino American. But if I want to write somebody else, I want to be able to do that without folks expecting that all I'm going to write is this. Does that make sense? It's a very like weird, it's a hard conversation to have. And you know, it's kind of even something that I need to work through. You know?
Yeah, I think it's like, it's a process. Like I'm Puerto Rican. And so it's something that I realized I had to seek out other people's experiences. Other people, and you, for me, what I want to say is like, I appreciate authors of color sharing their culture, sharing their experiences. And I appreciate the fact that they're adding, you know, new voices to the conversation.
Right.
Especially in the romance and the women's fiction, you know, space.
Exactly. And, exactly.
You know, it can be the trauma porn, you know, that can be like,
right.
You know, you can go that route, but the reality is like, we want fun, light, easy, fun escape reading. And
right.
I don't get enough. And like, I seek out those.
Agreed.
Like, because they're like, you just need that kind of like escape and just getting to know, go to a different place to be transported. Like one
right.
thing. But Once Upon a Sunset, it was like, I was transported to Philippines, and it was like, it was a great trip. And
right.
It wasn't like, you know, it was not like a place of like, you know, of suffering, a place of like anger, a place of like this can be a fun experience. And that's what I read books. So.
Right. And exactly. And you definitely were able to say it as well. It's, you know, with the whole conversations that's been going on lately, right? I want to be able to write my characters, but for folks not to expect the trauma porn from me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that as an author, I'm always looking kind of ahead to, because again, distraction is like the best way. Mm-hmm. I mean, thinking of your next book is the best form of distraction, but, I'm always looking forward to like, what's my next book? What's my next book? Cause I'm really excited to tell like these joyful stories. But I'm hoping that's not all what people expect from me. Do you know what I mean? I want to be able to always spread my wings. And luckily I have an editor right now where I can, like I went from a romance series, which was, I loved it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I got to do a sister story. And then I get to do, Once Upon a Sunset is a mother daughter story. Mm-hmm. Right. And then my 2021 book is a friendship story. Like I just want to be able to tell these stories but at the same time, there's just no expectation that I will have to bring something so serious. Yeah. Right. Or something where my characters have to literally learn, you know, I think that you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So I think that's where I'm at when it comes to that.
Well, so. Keep writing, keep sharing your
story. Yeah, thank you. I think that's, you know, that's what it is. Like you have to, as I feel like as an author of color, I feel like I have to be really intentional in what I write.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I don't want to say it's pressure because I have an innate pressure with myself just because I am that kind of person. Mm-hmm. But I know that I am fully intentional in the things that I write. And if at a point in my life, I just want to be not intentional, I want to be able to be that, you know what I mean? And just, if I wanted to write a sci-fi story, you know, about a dog in space, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I hope that I would be able to write that and still have this value as a creator,
yeah.
You know? So it's a lot that I think about because I'm always thinking about what I want to write next.
I love it. So let's talk about Once Upon a Sunset. So Once Upon a Sunset is a mother-daughter relationship about uncovering family history and they were connected with their family. So what inspired you to share this story?
So this came from a what if. Mm. So my grandfather moved or came to the United States in the 30s.
Okay.
And he worked in the canneries and made his way and then became a lawyer in Michigan.
Okay.
And returned back to the Philippines in his 40s because World War II happened.
Okay.
And he enlisted. So he had this whole life here in the United States.
Yeah.
And when he went back to the Philippines during the war, he met my grandmother.
Okay.
And then he never left the Philippines. From what I understand, it's because my grandmother didn't want to leave the Philippines, you know, so he stayed and that's where I was born. But I was having a conversation with my uncles once and I said to myself, I wonder if he had a life here.
Mm.
You know, you know what I mean? Like, how can you be in your almost 40s?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And be a lawyer at the time, that's a big deal for a brown person.
Yeah.
To be an attorney, right? And he was actually sponsored and he lived with a Jewish family.
Mm.
So isn't that interesting? Like just the marginalized helping the marginalized, you know, it was such a great story. But I always wondered, like, did he leave somebody here that he loved? And so that's where the inspiration came from, is what if? Mm-hmm. What if there was a person, who knows, right? Like, with all these DNA tests, who knows if somebody's going to knock on my door one day and say, hey, we're related.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because, you know, he was 40, so...
Yeah.
How was he spending his time? Like, who was he spending his time with?
Yeah, that's so true. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, interracial relationships back in the 40s were looked down upon.
Yep.
So I always, like, wondered also, that came into my questioning is, if he did have a relationship with a white woman, how did that work? Mm-hmm. Was that the reason why he didn't come back? Because he realized maybe nothing might happen, you know, like nothing could come of it.
Yeah. So,
yeah. So it's interesting.
That's an interesting take. I love that what if idea, and then be able to uncover it in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you did some research for the U.S. Philippine involvement in World War II based on your grandfather, mm-hmm. as well as some research. What was the most surprising thing you discovered from doing that research?
Well, I realized during this research that I knew nothing at all, first of all. It's amazing that you can go almost half your life, right? Because I'm in my mid-40s. And not really know anything about where you came from. So I trusted my parents, as one does, right, to tell the stories and to tell the stories of the family, the oral history.
Mm-hmm.
But I also realized that what came with oral history is embellishments, right? Or not embellishment in a bad way, but just oral history becomes this like storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And this like legendary and fabled, you know, like once upon a time, you know, your grandfather, you know, stowed away on a boat. You know, it was one of these long fabled stories. And when I finally got a hold of his service records, then I really got to see like, okay, he wasn't really where we thought he was. He was in a completely different place, you know. So I did some research with that. And then I also realized that the Filipino-American soldiers in the 1st and the 2nd Infantry, Filipino Infantry in the United States Army, were not given the accolades that they deserved. So there were Filipino scouts that helped Special Forces, and they were not ever acknowledged. And in fact, this is a fantastic thing. So my grandfather, 2 weeks ago, posthumously received the Congressional Gold Medal for Filipino veterans of World War II.
Wow.
So, yeah, so it's like 75 years in the making. And it was a senator that spearheaded it, and the senators from Hawaii, where they looked at the service history and realized so many of these soldiers did not get the accolades that they needed. And so this is given for so many posthumously. Mm. So I wasn't able to go because it was last minute, but my uncle and his family, they were able to receive it for the family. So it's really perfect timing for when my book came out, because it's like celebrating not just like, you know, finding out finally, like, here you go, Lola, there's your award, but also to like really understand that there was so much history that we missed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really powerful. Like, I studied World War II in college, and I had no idea about the Filipino involvement, like none whatsoever. And then,
oh my gosh, yeah.
And I was like,
I know,
what happened? Like, this history is not, it's not been told. And it's like, it's so powerful. That's why I love reading about books, because I learned something new. But it was just like, this is a horrible history I know nothing about. And just,
yeah. And well, they didn't teach it. I mean, luckily now in California, at least, so my cousin actually teaches Tagalog or Filipino. So first of all, like California is just like amazing, right? So they've incorporated, some schools have incorporated some Filipino American history in there.
Oh, that's
and great. then my cousin teaches the language. But I didn't grow up with that. And then to boot, I am not the greatest at history. Like I love to write and I was really great in science. But history was never really my strong point, probably because, quite honestly, it was hard for me to connect where I live, right? Because I was an immigrant. Like, it was hard, you know, I was having a hard time trying to find myself in this whole big scheme of the world growing up. And so to be able to research it on my own, I think probably took me took half my writing time. And it was because I was riveted. And I was like, oh my gosh, I know nothing. So I had to go to basic history. Do you know what I mean? And say, okay, yeah. where was the first Filipino infantry at this time? Mm-hmm. And then go from there. And then with my grandfather's records, and really try to, so this is not a biography at all, nor is it based on a true story, but I really wanted to follow the first infantry, first mm-hmm. Filipino infantry to kind of see where they went, mm-hmm. you know, it's neat.
Yeah, it's so neat. So a huge part of the story takes place in the Philippines, and we got to experience the sights, the food, the culture. How much fun was to infuse your culture in this book?
Oh my gosh, it was so much fun. I talked a lot with my mom and with my dad and with my uncle. You know, it really was neat because it brought us closer also. I think that in life, like we got so busy, so I have four kids and my parents live in California. And so we get on the phone, but it's sometimes very quick, you know what I mean? Or mm-hmm. Or it's, hey, what's up? How are you doing? It's that kind of thing, kind of checking in. But I feel like I got to know, because I was writing more about myself, I wanted to talk it out with somebody else. And I especially got to know my dad more. Mm-hmm. And my dad traditionally has been like the quiet dude, you know, and he was like the strong, silent type. So to be able to speak to him and talk to him about his dad mm-hmm. is, and what he missed about the film, you know what I mean? Just like talking about us and where we lived and what was his favorite thing to do and all these things. It was really, it connected me back. So it was such a wonderful book to write. And I was telling I write it all the time. Like I always say thank you to my editor, but I'm like, thank you so much for letting me write this book, you know, and being able to, and allow me to be able to bring this into the world because, it's special for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned a lot in this last year.
Yeah, it was amazing. I personally wanted to just visit the Philippines. I have a coworker who goes to the Philippines every year and she,
oh my gosh,
like she raves about it. She gets her hair done.
Oh. Yes.
Different families. She does like the whole outings and everything. And so this yep. book that I'm going to share with her, I'm like, you need to read this because like, you get another Philippine experience here. So.
Yeah. It's neat. It's really, really neat. And, you know, it's been tough for me to go back because we were in the army. I was in the army for a while and then I had babies like one after another.
Gosh.
So it's only really now that I can take off and then my husband's always gone. It's a very like, you know, it's a precarious timing, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to military families.
Yeah.
So one of these days I need to go back. Like the last time I went back was when I was 16. So it's changed a lot, but my memories are so strong.
Mm.
And that was when my grandfather was still alive.
Mm.
So I feel like I got the last bit of him, before he passed away, because he passed away, soon thereafter, probably like, you know, a few years thereafter. And, and I was able to see him when, he was still pretty lucid.
Mm.
So,
that's
yeah.
Awful. All right, so let's talk about Diana and Margot. So Diana is first. Diana, at the beginning of the book, faces a tough choice that could cost her a job. Basically, a choice between having a patient who cannot pay, going to the VIP room, and then having the VIP person be like, I should be using the room. I think was it important to showcase the inequities within healthcare? You know, and the whole process, because it was powerful. Like it's a relatable topic in the story.
Well, I really have strong feelings about healthcare. I've worked in healthcare and I've had babies. So like I really believe that every baby should be able to come into this world as safely as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because babies don't have a choice but to come into this world to a womb that they didn't have a choice to go into, you know? So, I do believe that, especially with childbearing because in labor and delivery where it's not always safe as most people might think it is. It takes a million different little things to make this one baby come out. It has to all go right. So it has to all go right and it's beautiful and it's perfect. And then one thing will go wrong and it's a hell in the handbasket. Right. Mm. So in my opinion, like every child should be able to come in to a safe place. And I don't think that money has to have money. I don't think money should have say in that. Mm-hmm. So in that case, I do believe that every woman should have, prenatal care covered. Mm-hmm. I do believe that they should have, you know, prenatal care, preventive medicine, all these things that allow for a baby to come into this world as safe as possible. Mm-hmm. And that's to include being able to keep the mother in the hospital, treat her well, and as well as the follow-up after. So that includes, you know, make sure the baby's eating, you know, make sure the baby has diapers, you know. So I could talk about healthcare for like a million years, but I think for this book, for me, it's about how people start in life.
Yeah.
And how people start in life is through this process of bringing the baby into a world.
Yeah.
And because a lot of this book is about start in life, and that's why, you know, Margot ended up all the way in Virginia, right? Is because her mother had to go across to be able to give her a good start in life.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, with all the talk about babies and healthcare, for me, really, a child should have a good start in their life, and that means taking care of their mom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I stand.
Yeah, I thought it was really powerful. Like I thought it was like something that you just assume, like. You know, it's like something you assume like it doesn't happen and you realize like, of course it's going to happen. Of course, you know, hospitals are moneymakers. They're looking for it.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's major moneymakers down to the Tylenol or down to the Motrin that's being given. I've been lucky. Like I've had all of my babies in military healthcare and military healthcare is, it's not perfect, but when you come into military healthcare, everybody's in the military. You know what I mean? Like we're all together. Like, so it's the environment coming in there is that I pretty much know that the private's spouse, the private's or that active duty person that's pregnant and laboring in the room next to me, we're getting the same thing.
Yeah.
Like they're not being left or I'm not given extra ice chips. You know, it's just, it's, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, baby's here. Mom's here. Let's go. You know, I worked in labor and delivery. So, there wasn't this, whoa, you know, let's give them extra. No, there's really no such thing. So I come from that point of view, that the best way to start is great prenatal care.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't end at the hospital. It continues on when they go home with the follow-ups, mm-hmm. with feeding the child, feeding mm-hmm. and clothing the child. So,
yeah.
No but yeah, it was for me, because also I'm trying to write these books that are joyful too. So I remember my drafts, like really getting into my, my stance on it. Do you know what I mean? Like, and then towards the later draft, I was like, okay, I can pull back a little bit. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, I just had to get it out there. You know what I mean? Like, put it all on the page. And then as the drafts go, then I'm able to kind of balance, like, okay, what is really the point of this chapter? And how does that contribute to the happy ending? You know, that kind of thing. So then I kind of like pull back or add more. So, but yeah, it was the same thing with the history. Like my first draft was like so much history in it. And you know, there's only really glimpses of World War II in there. It's not like full on historical fiction. So I put in so much and then I had to like take it all out. I'm like, this is not historical fiction. This is romantic women's fiction. happy ending. Like,
yes. Happy ending.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. So let's talk about Margot. So Margot's an interesting character. She's the mother of Diana, but she's also a social media influencer.
She has I know.
Friends. And
that's so fun.
I absolutely adore that. The fact that she's like known for her outfits and like she's like all she wants is her daughter's approval. She's like, I just want my daughter to like my pictures, you know?
I know.
That was like so fitting in today's society.
I love it. I mean, it's so neat because I was able to, I went on Instagram actually and went to look at these women in the winter of their lives as influencers. And there are quite a few.
Really?
Yes. And they are fabulous.
Yes.
And I just thought that was amazing, you know, because I think that when, you know, I'm mid-40s and I feel like I'm just coming into my prime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like probably because my kids are older, right? So I went through my 30s where I was just like, oh my God, I'm tired. Like I can't handle this anymore. Like I, you know, could barely get out of bed. Like I was exhausted. But like I'm in my mid-40s and I feel like I'm just getting started.
Mm.
And so I was like, man, how am I going to feel when I'm in my 50s, when I'm in my 60s?
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted Margot to have a second chance. You know what I mean? And it was important to me because it's important to me to see like somebody who's older
mm-hmm.
to be able to regain that freedom and that youth,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it was fun writing her. She was great in her outfit. You know, like she just came alive for me. Diana came first, but Margot was like clawing her way through, like, pay attention to me, kind of thing.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely adore Margot. I love her journey from like not wanting to reconnect her family and then reconnecting her family and like just growing. Like, it was like, it's like growing, you know, in your 50s and 60s, you don't think that growth happens. And that's where in Margot's journey just proves it wrong. Like growth happens at any stage of your life. And it's like,
Yeah. Thank you.
So this is a selfish question, but I read the book Happily Ever After. And the story makes a cameo in Once Upon a Sunset.
Yes.
Where did the sister talk to you?
Oh my gosh, I miss them so much. I mean, I pitched for a book for Jane, who is the middle sister.
Yeah.
And that wasn't approved.
Okay.
But I still think of them all the time. And in this book coming up in 2021, there's also going to be a little bit of cameo there as well.
Oh,
yeah. I like to put, and then you'll see like some of in Katie Happily Ever After and Once Upon a Sunset, as well as this upcoming book in A Book Club Far Away, you'll also see some glimpses of characters and or things from my romance series too. Mm. So like, I can't like go, you know, like I feel like they're just, I'm writing standalones, but they're connected. It was like one thing, you know, but it makes me feel so happy to know that they're still existing somewhere out there in the world. These sisters are still like dealing with shenanigans. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they're like really coming out of their shell as a business. And I feel like, you know, relationships have moved on. I would love to write about Jane and then cameo all the, you know, the two other sisters. And I mean, maybe one day I'll write it and like EPUB it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because I miss them. They were great.
They were great.
I mean, they were great company to me as well. I really feel like sometimes these characters come alive for me. So I miss them because they're so like, they're hilarious.
Mm-hmm. They were hilarious. Yeah. They were just like a great family just to be around.
Yeah.
Felt like so like welcoming.
Yeah.
Like so unique within each other. So
yeah,
that was so great. That was like a great book. And I lived in DC a few years ago. Well,
yeah,
decade ago. And I was like, it's fun to see a book set in DC and love that the books are set in Alexandria. It's like a neighborhood that is like, it's unique and it's fun. And so it's so fun. So love it.
Yeah. And I love Old Town.
Yeah.
I really, really love Old Town. And it's a great, like, I like that it's a little town in a big city. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's very diverse.
Yeah.
And yet there's so many mom and pop stores everywhere. So I feel like it's a good mix, you know. And it's definitive, like architecturally, it's definitive.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with our readers what they should read next. So what is your favorite genre?
Okay, so I was thinking about that, and I think it's a toss-up because I love romance, but I also love contemporary women's fiction, and I think that shows in what I write. So I think that it's a very hard thing to nail down, but those are the top two, yeah.
So who's your favorite author or authors, if you have multiple?
So hands down, Louisa May Alcott is my favorite. Mm-hmm. But I also love Isabel Allende.
Mm-hmm.
is one of my favorites too. And these, I of course have a love for many authors now, but these two like really changed. It came, you know, I read them at a time when it was, you know, most impressionable time, which drew me into reading.
Mm.
So those are the two. It's like, you know how like you just remember like that's when I decided I love to read. So these are the two authors.
I love it. So what are your top three books of all time?
Oh my gosh. So I would have to say Little Women.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to say Waiting to Exhale.
Mm.
That's Terry McMillan. I love Terry. I know I didn't mention Terry McMillan, but I love her. Mm. There's just something, I think I wrote it on an IG post the other day where I said that there's just something about the cadence of the banter and of the language that I am just like swept up. Like I'm just turning pages, all of her books. I love all of them. And I would have to say House of the Spirit, but that was when I was a sophomore in high school.
Mm.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to go there. You know what I mean? This is where I want to be. So I would say those three are my top three of all time.
I love it. What has been a book that you read this year that you loved?
Okay, so I keep track of my book list. In 2020, I would have to say that romance-wise, mm-hmm. in 2020, Sweet Talkin' Lover by Tracy Livesay. And then if I were to do another fiction, because I am in a book club, and so I read a lot of book club books as well, Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo. It's amazing. I mean, the world building is just blows my mind. But if we went to 2019, because 2020 is just too much. Yeah, 2019, I would say Get a Life, Chloe Brown.
Oh, so good.
It's so good. I mean, I read it and I listened to it. And I was like, man, this girl can write.
Yes.
This woman can write. You know, like, it's just, she was able to really tease out all the emotions.
Yes.
So that would be my romance pick. And then my non-romance pick would be Joanne Ramos's The Farm. Joanne Ramos is a Filipino-American author, and her book has been, it's kind of dystopian about women who live in the spa area, the spa, and all they do is gestate babies. So they're in 70s and they gestate babies for rich women. So it's sort of like Handmaid's Tale, but not quite as, I guess, dramatic, or not quite as dangerous seeming,
yeah.
But it's more insidious, and it was such a great book.
Gosh, I must pick up. So,
yeah, Red, White, and Royal Blue was really close for me in 2019 because, yeah, that was amazing. And I would say 2018 because I just talked about this with somebody else, that Thirsty is my 2018 read, and that's Mia Hopkins.
Okay, so I'm going to pick that one up because it's been mentioned this podcast about four different times. So
yeah.
I think I'm going to pick Thirsty up like tonight. So that will be my
You might not sleep because it was so good. Like Thirsty, I read it in 24 hours. Like I even was reading while I was cooking dinner and then like I burnt the green beans. I was like, oh my gosh. I even like tweeted Mia Hopkins. I'm like, dude, I burnt my dinner.
Oh my gosh.
Because I was reading your book, because I really wasn't paying attention. It was so good. So those are the three. But Get a Life, Chloe Brown last year was just
so good.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just so good. It was so satisfying and so authentic and just wonderful. And then Sweet Talkin' Lover for this year so far, Tracy Livesay writes, reminds me of Terry McMillan. The banter, the back and forth, the throw in of the, she throws in a serious topic, but can wind it into a conversation that can be funny. But then the characters understand how serious it is. It's really, it takes so much talent to do that, you know, because you're writing romance. And it's not edgy romance, you know, it's a contemporary romance, it's small town romance. And to be able to put in some serious notes in there, but then not detract, not fall off the rails, is talent to me. It's something that I always strive for, you know what I mean? Because I don't want to go off the rails and be all very serious, you know, so... In my writing, anyway, I read a lot of serious books, but in my own writing, like I want to write it, what comes out of me is more joyful stuff. But sometimes I'm like, let's pull it back on the tracks. Anywho, but yes, yay!
These are awesome. So tell us where we can find you online.
So I'm Tiff Marcello everywhere: Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook page. So I'm most active on my Instagram, Facebook page every once in a while, and Twitter only in the morning.
Okay.
For 5 a.m. Writers Club, but that's it. I'm trying to be good. I'm trying to write more versus, you know, I'm trying to manage my time. It's a daily endeavor to be a good girl and manage my time.
I hear ya. So thank you, Tiff, for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and for going and like chatting about everything.
Yeah.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.